This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and thanks for listening.
And I'm Web Girl Dana, your friendly female counterpart, and together, Rob and I, we try to do what we can to bring you what's happening on the net, the whole digital lifestyle thing, like top food and beverage sites reaching millions, an unbelievable amount of people.
Yes, it's amazing.
And MSN's going to be building a new search engine.
Uh-oh, more competition for Google.
And speaking of that, Overture launches Content Match.
Ooh, even more competition for Google. Look out. This week we're going to be discussing Europe's largest Wi-Fi hotspot with Professor Peter Apers, who is the scientific director for the Center for Telematics and Information Technology at the University of Twente in the Netherlands. And he's also chairman of the steering committee that created this giant hotspot with the assistance of some very large technology companies that will be using it as a testbed for wireless access to mobile devices.
The University of Twente, if you look at the campus, the size of it is 350 acres. We have 650 access points. So that's covering the buildings, but also outside. It's a park-like campus, so the students can also access in a wireless way, just sitting at the poolside or something like that.
Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Hugh Seagraves. He's the founder of Voice Monkey, and he'll talk to us about his cool new instant voice communications tool. It's being used by everyone from bloggers to people who are just wanting to send a personal voice message around the world via the internet. Just another way to add a personal dimension to websites and email.
You know, people that are using it on blogs, and what they can do is call in, leave a message, and that message appears on their blog as an audio file. And then people that come to visit their blog or whatever can click on that, and they can hear the message.
Some interesting net trends around the web this week. The top food and beverage sites have some huge traffic numbers.
Yes, they do. Nielsen Net Ratings has been tracking the top food sites out there and how they're doing. And actually, Kraft Foods, believe it or not, is taking up half of that top 10 positions with all their different brands that they have. So they're really doing a terrific job of marketing on the web and making their brands visible and doing some creative things with promotions and recipes and games and all sorts of things that they're offering off of their websites.
But it's kind of interesting. I mean, everybody remembers when M&M's was going to be coming out with a new color. Well, that's a perfect example of what we're talking about. Remember the voting that you could do online for choosing a color, putting in your submission for the color you wanted the M&M to introduce? In the last months of voting, the numbers skyrocketed as far as traffic on the site, 563% more than the usual. And then the day they revealed that new color, well, was it blue?
I think that's what it was. It's been a while.
They had 500,000 visitors versus the usual 31,000 that they get.
My past, anyway, has involved a lot working with consumer products, and I launched one of the very first websites for the Florida citrus industry out there, floridajuice.com, so you want to go check it out. And so anyway, this is a terrific trend, and you know, the years that I spent in the consumer products business, I was always wondering when those companies were going to get it, and I think this is terrific.
Well, if I can just say, too, in the Florida Department of Citrus where you did their website, none of them got it. I'll just say none of them got it.
Well, and I'd say that they probably still don't quite get it yet because it's the same website I built back in 1996.
Yeah, but it's an all right website. Microsoft is doing something new. They're always doing something new, but they just kind of let it slip a little bit. At least there was some interesting indicators that they're working on a new search engine.
Well, they've released some information saying that they're going to put together their own crawler-based search engine. And one of the clues that you can tell when Microsoft is doing something new is you go look at their job listings.
And
so what they've recently done is launched a bunch of new jobs in the whole search area for the MSN side of the equation. So that kind of coincided when they announced that they were going to go after Google and Yahoo. And that's really what this is all about is they're going to start battling because MSN has been relying on Google and Yahoo for search results for many, many years. And so they want to establish their own presence.
Search engines are just the most interesting thing to talk about. We do a lot of talking about them here on Web Talk Guys, Google and such.
Well, they're the number one thing that people do to find things on the web. So it's important.
Well, Overture finally caught up with Google in that the whole idea of contextual ads.
That's a tongue twister, isn't it?
I couldn't get it out. Why don't you just define what contextual ads are, and then we'll say what Overture did this week.
Well, it's a combination of sponsored links and using content pages out there on the web, like web.guys. We write articles on the, like on the side column of one of our article pages, we would have a list of sponsored links, essentially. And the links that appear on that page are generated based on the keyword density of our content on that page.
So you're kind of basically selling banner space.
Well, yeah, but it's text links, which work much better than banners.
Right, and it's totally being managed. I mean, you don't have to do anything. It's all being managed by Google. And then as a website owner, you get paid per the click, small percentage.
What a novel thing. Well, hopefully people will click on them.
So we told you that Overture was getting into the game. They did. They just launched something called Content Match, and it's their own version of the contextual ads, like Google's AdSense. So that's the new program that was just recently announced by Overture.
Well, Dana, let's open our digital mailbag, because we always get terrific emails from our listeners out there, and we want to get it on the show and talk about it a little bit, because some of them are interesting, and they raise interesting subjects.
We kind of like it, because it's our own little version of fan mail, even though usually it's like how we can do better.
Well, and also, we're a talk radio show, but we don't take callers, so this is our only way to get listener feedback.
Oh,
so,
but boy, do we get email.
Definitely keep sending the emails to us, and we want to hear from you, and we'll get it on the show. We heard from David Black, and he's an IT security manager for NASA at the Marshall Space Flight Center. And he made a comment or a suggestion, I should say. Please consider putting WebTalk Guys radio show content on Microsoft's Plus Media Sync and Go product, which is basically a software program that you can buy as an extra product for Microsoft to plug into your XP operating system that will allow you to synchronize to multimedia content with your Pocket PC. So if you go out and buy a Windows-based Pocket PC, you can get video and audio content. And he's suggesting that we get picked up with that. And I have some good news. Microsoft is going to start picking us up for Sync and Go. And that should start probably next week, more than likely. So go check out that if you got Windows XP. It's a terrific little application. And if you want to get a Pocket PC, it's another reason to get a Pocket PC. Thank you, David, for the terrific email.
Well, if any of you guys have heard some interesting news or have a favorite website, like Rob mentioned before, we want to hear from you. So the number to call, and in this case, the name to type is Dana@WebTalkGuys.com or RobG@WebTalkGuys.com. And we'll do our best to get your thoughts on the air.
That's right. Spam us all you want.
Yeah.
Oh, and also we wanted to remind you that the WebTalk Guys is available on demand for listening anytime as a downloadable MP3 file or a Windows Media file format. So go to WebTalkGuys.com and you can get it anytime for playback on your schedule.
And we wouldn't have a WebTalk Guys show without our faithful and wonderful sponsors that help bring us to you guys every week. And one of them is Compass Communications in Seattle. They're a co-location provider, and they have servers. And that's where the WebTalk Guys server is living. And they're at ccom.net. And also, a new sponsor this week, justforyucks.com, which is a fantastic, funny, great humor t-shirt site. And you'll be hearing about them in a minute during the break.
PayByCheck.com also provides support, and they offer an easy way to accept leading online e-commerce payment solutions via just a regular checking account. And we'd really appreciate it if you gave them all the support at PayByCheck.com.
Thanks for hanging out with us. Don't go anywhere, because on the other side, we'll be speaking with the founder of VoiceMonkey.com. You're listening to WebTalk Guys Radio.
This is the WebTalk Guys radio show, and thank you for listening today. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
And this is WebGirl Dana. Well, you know, we love audio, and we love blogs, and of course we stream all the time. So why wouldn't we have our next guest on? This is a guy that is doing everything near and dear to our hearts. Hugh Seagraves is the founder of Voice Monkey. You gotta love that name. And he's developed a great new voice communication tool that's really being used by everyone, like bloggers or just the average Joe, to send out audio messages via email or on their website or on their blog, because he's made a really simple way to do it. We're not going to give it away. We're going to let Hugh tell us all about it, all about Voice Monkey. Hugh, thanks for calling in today.
Hello, Rob, and hello, Dana.
Hey, why don't you give us an overview on how Voice Monkey works? It sounds like a real fun kind of tool to use to record voice.
Well, it's actually pretty straightforward. It's a web service that all you have to do is you call in, leave a message, and that message is converted to an MP3 file, and then anybody with an internet connection can listen to that message online. For example, I have, you know, people that are using it on blogs, and they can, what they can do is call in, leave a message, and that message appears on their blog as an audio file. And then people that come to visit their blog or whatever can click on that, and they can hear the message. That's the basic operation.
This would work with any blog, I mean, whether you're part of Movable Type or Blogger or anything like that. It doesn't really matter where it ends up. Is that correct?
Right. It's totally agnostic as far as what it's used for. In fact, one of the more challenging things is getting it to work with blogs and using XML RPC to get it to post to blogs, because Blogger has an API that uses XML RPC, and I got that working, and it works on Movable Type, Blogger, iJournal, and Journal Space so far. And then I've contacted some other blog companies to try to get them to let me integrate it there and find out how to integrate it.
That's great. Now, if someone was listening right now and wanted to try out VoiceMonkey, just tell them briefly sort of the steps involved when they come to your site. What do they do first?
Well, all they have to do if they want to actually use it is just sign up. There's a sign-up form. They sign up and get a mailbox, and those are processed within 24 hours. And then once they have a mailbox, they just call the phone number that I give them. I have a toll-free line, and there's a non-toll-free line also. But they just call the toll-free number. When they call in, they're prompted for their mailbox number and their password, if applicable. That can be turned off. And they just follow the instructions on the program and leave a message on the system. And then after that, they can choose whether they want to upload it automatically, or if they want to listen to it before they upload it, or if they want to delete it, because a lot of times people record something they don't want other people to hear, or they didn't say it right, or anything like that. But and then that's it. And then when they're done, they can just go to their website or their blog or whatever where it's listed and listen to it.
Oh, okay.
So they can do this just driving down the road. I mean, they don't have to be near their PC at the time they're doing this. It's just a phone.
Right. In fact, I've had a lot of people do that where they said, oh, this is great. Now I can call in from this event I'm going to this weekend. Or I actually have had people call in driving down the road saying, hey, this is so-and-so, and I'm going to such and such place, and, you know, here's the update on what's going on. Oh, one of the fun things that somebody did was they called in from the Matrix Reloaded sequel. They were standing in line at the Matrix Reloaded sequel and called in.
Uh-huh.
And they run a fan site for, I guess, the Keanu Reeves fan site. And they called in and said, hey, we're in line, and here's what's going on. And then when she got done, she called in and said, hey, we're done, and it was great, and here's what's great about it. And that was a lot of fun. So, yeah, you can call in from anywhere.
That recording would create an MP3 file that would automatically post it to the user's blog?
That's one way that it works. It can post directly to blogs. It doesn't have to post directly.
Sure.
It can just sit on a file on a server somewhere and wait for them to use it for whatever they want to. Basically, all I've done is made it so that, you know, somebody can call in and it creates a link. And, of course, they can get to that link however they want. It can be posted to their blog, or it can be posted to their website, or they get an email that says, here's your link that you just created with this message on it, et cetera.
What other uses are you seeing people use the system for? Is there anything kind of unusual or a fascinating story?
Yeah, it's been real interesting to see how people use it, because when I first started it, I thought, okay, this will be great for people operating webcams who want to, you know, give messages to the webcam visitors and add the new dimension to it. And it's been interesting to watch people use it, because they use it for different ways. I had a guy just today call in, and he did a little poetry reading for people who visit his website or his blog. I'm not sure what he's using it for. I've had one family actually use it to give each other updates on what's going on. I guess they're spread out all over the country or all over the world. This lady will call in and have her son sing, and I guess the grandparents can hear that wherever they are. I had a guy do an actual radio show, like a little short radio show where he played country music, and he would comment on it and say, you know, here's a song that's coming out, and I like it, or I don't like it, or whatever. And that was a little brief thing he did. It was kind of like a supplement to his website.
Creativity follows the technology, doesn't it?
Right, it sure does. And the thing is that there's a lot more uses for it than just that. I think there's going to be a lot of business uses. So far, most of my users have been personal users like bloggers. And the great thing about that is you get an environment where you can develop it and try to figure out, you know, what's going to work and what's not going to work for the user. And I think down the road, there's going to be a lot more uses for it, for advertising, for companies that want to send, companies that send out emails with information in it, just all kinds of stuff, putting on a website for people to use to send out information, stuff like that.
In fact, once you enter the enterprise area, the business uses, and you actually will be probably seeing the some of the benefits and some of the financial benefits that VoiceMonkey can bring to you. Because right now, I believe, is sort of a testing ground. There's no cost involved. Is that correct?
Right. Right now, it's free for anyone to use. The overhead is really low, so I'm able to do that. Basically, giving away accounts, because what I want people to do is use it. And the more people use it, the more I get to develop it, and the more I develop it, the better it gets. Taking a step into a business is a big step, because then you have people expecting you to do things and expecting certain things of you because they're giving you money.
Yeah.
So what I've tried to do is kind of waited to take that step until I've got it to where I know it works, I know it's reliable, I know it works the way people want it to work. What I'm hoping to do is keep it free for, say, bloggers, people that use blogs and personal uses, and have a limited version of that, because there's certain functions that you can limit it and not let people do this or that, or let them do this or that. Always have a free version that people can use, and then have a business version that people can use, which has a lot more functionality to it.
Yeah.
And hopefully support it that way. And even if it's just self-supporting, and that's it, that would be fine.
You are really an altruistic guy, Hugh.
Well, I do enjoy working on it a lot. I just wish I had thought of it 3 or 4 years ago.
And what you have been doing for several years before VoiceMonkey and continue is maintaining a really good site called WiredVideo.com.
Wired Video started, I think, in 1997 or 1998, and it was just my hobby site. But what, you know, I was in doing audio and video online and stuff like that. So I thought, well, I see other people sharing information. I'll share some information. And that's one thing I actually did want to mention is all the people out there who share information, thank you. Because I've actually learned a lot from other people, like, okay, how do I figure out how to do this? And how do I figure out how to do that? And I've had a lot of other people's just hobby websites give me a lot of info. Wired Video just started out as a hobby, and then I started adding audio and video clips that I found on the internet. And the whole idea there was that people were emailing audio and video clips to each other. And I thought, well, why don't I just have a website where I put them on there? And people can listen to them or watch them, stuff like that. Just send a link instead of sending a whole file.
So what types of content can you find on wiredvideo.com?
Well, I have a bunch of audio clips. One of my favorites is there's a clip from American Idol where the guy's singing. You really have to hear it to understand what's good about that. just whatever I find that's funny images. Actually, the most recent addition to Wired Video is the Landau video, which is the one where the guy is trying to do a live report from some downtown bar scene, whatever, and he's fighting with a lady for the microphone, which is great because you always see live reports, but you never see live reports gone wrong.
That's
good. Just a lot of stuff like that. And my pictures, of course.
That's terrific, Hugh. Thanks for joining us on the show, telling us all about your cool stuff.
Yeah, no problem. It's been great.
All right.
Definitely go check out VoiceMonkey at voicemonkey.com and Wired Video. Thanks, Hugh.
Great. Thank you.
Wish you a lot of success.
Thanks.
Stay connected. In a moment, we'll learn about the largest hotspot in all of Europe. And you will never believe where it is. This is Web Talk Guys Radio. Hey, Bruce, what does your t-shirt say?
Hey, take a look at this shirt.
Okay, Rubber Baby Bonker Busters. That's funny.
Oh, I just love this shirt.
I haven't seen that one before. Where in the world did you get that?
Just4Yucks.com.
Just4Yucks.com.
Yeah, Just4Yucks.com. They have more than 250 original hilarious designs that are available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Wait, 250 tongue twister t-shirts?
Oh, you should see what they have. Cartoons, cliches, puns. They've got wordplay on all kinds of topics.
Well, what I want to know is, do they have computer t-shirts?
Oh, of course they do.
Oh, well, it sounds like Just4Yucks.com has just about everything I can imagine.
Oh, they do. And they have a few things you probably couldn't imagine.
Oh, likewise.
Like professional wrestling in outer space.
Uh-huh.
And also the Roswell Rodeo, you know, the one featuring alien cowboys?
Oh, way cool. I like that. Do they put their designs on anything besides t-shirts and mouse pads?
Just4Yucks.com? They've got coasters, pinback buttons, they've got magnets, keychains. Oh, you have to check them out.
Oh, sounds like I better check out Just4Yucks.com.
Good idea.
You're back and listening to the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show, and thank you for listening. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
And this is Web Girl Dayton. Well, you guys ever get really tired of trying to hop on the internet on your wireless pocket PC or Palm, and you go out of the hot zone? I mean, way too fast. You go in and you go out. I mean, there's no mobility in mobility.
Yeah.
Or is there, Rob?
Well, I think that there is. And this week we're going to be discussing Europe's largest Wi-Fi hotspot. We're going to be speaking with Professor Peter Apers, who's the Scientific Director for the Center of Telematics and Information Technology at the University of Twente in the Netherlands. And he's also chairman of the steering committee that created this giant hotspot with the assistance of some very large technology companies that he will allude to in our conversation, I'm sure. Those companies are using this giant hotspot, which has like 632 access points and covers a few square miles, as a testbed for mobile devices. Peter, thank you for joining us on the show. It's great to have you calling in from the Netherlands.
Well, it's nice to talk to you about our hotspot.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic to hear all about it. Let's talk about the giant hotspot, and really, how big is it? And it's being said that it's the largest in Europe. Why don't you give us a little bit of background, like on how many access points you have and what kind of coverage area?
Yeah, the University of Twente has, if you look at the campus, the size of it is 350 acres. We have 650 access points. So that's covering the buildings, but also outside. It's a park-like campus. So these students can also access internet in a wireless way, just sitting at the poolside or something like that.
Sure. Well, that sounds terrific.
Yeah.
Now, being the chairman of the steering committee that kind of built this wireless campus, why did you guys actually build this? What was the reasoning that you guys came up with to actually construct such a large hotspot?
The University of Twente profiles itself as an ICT university, so we think it's very important to also to get them, the students, familiar with the information technology and the communication technology. And therefore, we are very busy with implementing things like this. If you look at the very high-speed fixed network to the offices, we have a 100 megabit connection, and to the national network, we have a gigabit connection. So we're very advanced in that, and the next step is wireless internet connection. Everybody knows that, but it's very important for our students to get in contact with this new technology, both in their education, but also with the PhD students to get in contact with from the research point of view. We would like to facilitate the creativity in developing new applications, and to actually understand what it means to work in an environment like this.
It's very exciting to think that you could just take your laptop right out of the classroom and sit under a tree and do your homework.
Yeah.
How long has the hotspots been in place, and now what are you starting to see its uses be?
Well, it's in place now for a couple of months, and so all the students have a laptop, and what you can see is that they have changed the building. It's not the traditional classroom. They have a large area in which students have their own desk. They have desks where they sit together. They talk to the teacher as a group or then individually, and everywhere they take their laptop. And so that's one part where we use it. And the other one is that we're trying to get rid of the idea of the traditional libraries. So what we want to do is to turn it into what we call edu cafes. So it's more an informal environment where students sit together and have some drinks, coffee or tea, whatever, and at the same time have wireless access to internet and do their homework individually or in a team. But those are the kind of applications we have right now.
Do you actually see this network actually saving the college money in the long run? I mean, less facilities have to be built, less physical materials have to be purchased. Or, I mean, what's the long-term benefit, you think, from something like this?
From the management point of view, it's cost-saving because right now we have large rooms with just lines of PCs. And we're getting rid of those, and if you have a wireless environment, it takes less space. Mm-hmm. And we're just renovating the university right now, and it's very costly to have these large rooms. So in that sense, from that point of view, it is cost saving.
Now, you're talking about cost savings, but up front, there are some costs to build the largest wireless hotspot in Europe. Now, you had some partners, and I think you were sponsored by, well, why don't you tell us?
Yeah. Actually, the sponsorship is from the Dutch government. What they did is that because we invested in our fixed network, it's all glass fiber, they added some money to it to allow us to implement the hotspot. And it was the largest part of the hotspot is implemented by IBM and Cisco, and part of it is donated by Intel.
Well, those are some big partners to have, and I bet they were excited to sort of get on the lips of a lot of young students, 6,000 new students that are going to be making their way in the world.
Yeah, that's right. And what they're actually interested in is to set up the applications. I think that a lot of these companies are all trying to imagine what kind of applications you will have in this wireless environment. And here you have a group of 6,000 students that can actually use their creativity to come up with these kind of applications. We have small student companies that are working on new ideas, and these major companies like IBM, with which we have a governance program, they're very much interested in pursuing these ideas.
Let's talk about what happens in the classroom a little bit, because I'm sure for you guys to support this whole network and have it work for all your students and your staff and your professors, that a lot of your instruction is being done utilizing the network and the online experience. How deep is that going into the class program that you're putting together for all of your classes throughout the university?
Yeah, just like I said, I mean, we're just starting. So basically our main experience in the Bachelor Industrial Design, and next year a lot of the other bachelors will follow. And what you actually see is that you get rid of these traditional way. I mean, the teacher in front of the class and the students just sitting there listening and getting bored after 45 minutes.
Yeah.
This way they can really interact with the teacher. And most of the time they don't sit in the classroom. I mean, you have to prepare the classes yourself, and you interact with the teacher by asking questions. And you can do that in small groups. We think it's very important that they work in teams, but it can also be individually. They prepare everything using their laptop.
Interesting. So are all the staff and students required to have some sort of connectivity to the network in order to function properly in their classes?
Well, everybody, of course, has a PC on the desktop, but the number of people that want to have a laptop is growing drastically, because they can really see the advantages. But the advantage is not just for our own personnel. The idea of the network is that it is open for everybody. Mm-hmm. So it means students, for example, from other universities can visit us and use their own laptop, and via our wireless connection, they go to their own university, to their files over there. And the same is true with the companies with which we work. Across the university, we have Business and Science Park, and they're also participating in this hotspot. So if people from these companies are coming over here, they can also use our network to get access to their own files at the company.
Peter, I'm curious if you are seeing local business people that aren't necessarily associated with the campus sneaking on to the beautiful park-like setting that you have and enjoying an afternoon of wireless surfing, or are they allowed not to come onto campus?
The idea is that I'm not a technical person myself, but the front layer will be open for everybody, but then right after that you will be connected to your own internet provider. And as far as the wireless environment is concerned, there will be more hotspots in the Netherlands. There's another program that is setting up hotspots in the various cities. Of course, they are a lot smaller than this one. So in the end, everybody will be using it. And there will, of course, be a form of paying for it. Mm-hmm. But in this case, what we have now is just an experimental one.
So what kind of network security do you guys have? I mean, does a student have to log on in order to get to the actual network using the Wi-Fi? Is that what they have to do right now?
Yeah, okay. You have to log on. We have a large security research program in my own institute, and the idea is that we're also going to look at authorization issues to get access to these kind of networks.
So what is the standard that you guys are using for the actual network itself? I mean, obviously it's a Wi-Fi, so you're probably supporting B?
Outside right now it's B, mm-hmm. and inside it's a mixture of G and B. To go to the 802.1x.
Oh, okay.
And the security is included.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Professor Peter Apers of the University of Twente in the Netherlands, talking about how he and others built Europe's largest Wi-Fi hotspot. More in a moment with Peter. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Hey, dig my shirt.
Ooh, Rubber Baby Bunker Busters. Oh, that's funny. Where'd you get it?
Justforyucks.com.
Oh, justforyucks.com.
Yeah, justforyucks.com. They have more than 200 original designs available on t-shirts and mouse pads.
Oh, that's one of those cheapo t-shirts.
No. This is a high-quality Hanes t-shirt. And justforyucks.com also carries funny mouse pads, coasters, buttons, magnets, and keychains.
Keychains, that's great. I better check out justforyucks.com.
And now, the Internet's future, the Web Talk Guys.
You're back and listening to the Web Talk Guys World Radio Show, and thank you for listening. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
This is Web Girl Dana. We have Peter Apers on the phone. He's a professor at the University of Twente in the Netherlands. And we're chatting about the university's wireless hotspot, the largest one in Europe.
So as you look out, you know, into the future on using wireless, do you see the wireless network replacing your hardware network?
No, never.
Okay.
Because you see the access points, they have to go directly to the fixed network. Otherwise, you won't be able to get the bandwidth. If you have to share the wireless network with too many people, you won't get any bandwidth per individual.
Oh, okay.
So that means that the fixed network even becomes more important in a wireless environment because you get more users. There's no way you can get rid of your fixed network.
Yeah, because certainly the bandwidth speeds are going to be increasing. You know, like the G standard is 56 megabytes. I mean, you start getting up into that kind of bandwidth, then you can do a lot of things.
Yeah, but you have to take into account that if there are a lot of people in a classroom, then they are all going to share that. So that means that, you have to divide it by the number of people that are using it.
Oh, sure.
It. Yeah. For us, the fixed network is extremely important. And, of course, there are still applications that require very fast speed. For example, one of the applications is Mobi Health. It's a program that is funded by the European Union. And the idea is that if you're a patient, you get an accident, for example, in the street, and you're taken into an ambulance, they put sensors on your body, and then wireless, there's a connection to the hospital where the specialist can say, well, you have to do so-and-so with this patient before he actually arrives at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the kind of applications that we foresee.
A lot of people keep talking about location-based applications for wireless networks.
Yeah.
And is that something that you guys are planning on testing as well?
Yeah. This is at the PhD level, but we're doing research on that and to see what does it mean to have contextual data and how you can actually deal with that and try to improve the service that you're providing to the person. Like if you have a PDA, And you're traveling, that you get notified about the traffic jams and that you can take a different route.
Peter, you are the you're a professor, in fact, scientific director at the Center for Telematics and Information Technology at the university.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell me how you got involved. Was this your brainchild? Did you sort of take the ball and run with it? And how excited are you about all of this?
Well, first of all, I'm very excited about it. But, you have noticed that already.
We have, definitely.
So what happens is, I think that if you look at the developments in the United States and in Europe, I think in Europe the telephone companies are very important. And in that sense, there's a lot of emphasis on communication technology. So my university is very strong in everything that has to do with network technology, services providing on networks and things like that. And from that point of view, the step towards mobile and wireless communication was a very easy one. And at the starting point of this steering committee on wireless campus, we really had to take a tough decision. Are we going in the line of mobile communication, like with GPRS and UMTS, mm-hmm. or are we going to take the wireless LAN, the Wi-Fi approach? And at that time, the Wi-Fis were just coming out, and so it was a difficult decision. But in Europe, all over Europe, UMTS was so heavily taxed by the governments that all the telephone companies really got into big problems. And so therefore we chose for the wireless LANs, for the Wi-Fis, and of course because of the bandwidth. And at that time everybody thought, well, you can just put Wi-Fi at home or in your office. But the way they are developed now is large bandwidth with the prices. I mean, you can cover a whole university.
Yeah, it's...
So it's competition now with the telephone company.
Now, aren't you guys planning on experimenting with 3G, those kind of technologies as well?
Yeah, sure. Of course, it's very important that if you leave campus, and this will be future, mm-hmm. if you leave campus, that your wireless connection will be taken over by something else. Mm-hmm. So we're very much interested in working together with the telephone companies to make these transitions.
You know, if you look out in the future here, is Wi-Fi going to become how most people make a connection, or is it going to be through a 3G or a combination of the two?
It will always be a combination of the two. But I think right now, especially in the Netherlands, there are a lot of people trying to create hotspots. And if the impression is that they're going to grow pretty large, mm-hmm. and that you can actually share them. So, like people living in the street, of course, I know there's the security problem and privacy problems and things like that. But again, people are going to share hotspots, and that means that it will be quite easy to get wireless access.
There's been a lot of controversy about hotspots here in the United States here recently, mm-hmm. about the fact that a lot of the analysts are saying that they're not financially viable, because, mm-hmm. you know, especially the free hotspots, those kind of things, because there's no real continuity of revenue model that can come from a wide network, because everybody's putting in their own hotspots all over the place.
What do you see, as far as how is
that going to affect your network, or do you see that affecting Europe just in general, just like over here in the U.S.?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's very important to get a clear idea what the interesting applications are.
Mm-hmm.
And our network is actually intended for that. It's not just for the university. It's also for companies that they can set up experiments with our students to get a feeling of what kind of applications are of interest. And I think this is in the beginning with the mobile phones. This was also a big question. What will be the application? First, people said, I'm never going to use a mobile phone, because if I want to use the phone, I'm either in my office or I'm at home. And now almost everybody has a mobile phone in Europe. Mm-hmm. You would never have predicted this, but these SMSs, I don't know whether you know what it is, but it's sent these small messages, mm-hmm. is extremely popular with high school kids. The telephone companies are making more money out of that than out of the normal phone calls.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's very difficult to predict the kind of applications. We are now in a phase of trying to understand what it means to have wireless internet access. And I think in a couple of years, when we have a better idea what the applications will be, then you get business models, and then you get more companies that are going to invest in it.
So are you having other colleges from around the world contacting you to find out, you know, how you built this network and how you're planning on building it out over time?
Yeah, we get two kind of questions. One is, of course, the more the technology-oriented question, And there's the other question is how does it actually influence your own educational programs?
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I mean, in the latter part, we're still experimenting with it. We're also trying to understand ourselves. What does it mean for our own teaching?
Mm-hmm.
How is it going to change?
You bet.
And we hope that in future that if we have a better idea about it, that we can actually share it with other universities.
Peter, it was great having you on the phone.
Okay, well.
Tell us all about your huge wireless hotspot, and it sounds terrific.
Yeah.
And
well, I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you.
And I hope that everybody will get enthusiastic as I am. And just like I said, I mean, if other people are interested, they can always contact us, and we can provide them with help.
What is the best web address to find out more about the wireless network?
I think it's best to get to my own institute. It's www.ctit.utwente.nl.
Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for listening to Web Talk Guys this week. That's it for our show this week, but Rob and I will be back here bringing you more glimpses into the future of the Internet.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.